Welcome to MTB Cast. My name is Joe Polk. Today's Wednesday, June 8, 2016. And that means we're just 2 days away from the grand depart of the Tour Divide. The Tour Divide is a bike packing race, a time trial, if you will, that runs from Banff, Alberta, Canada, all the way down to Antelope Wells, New Mexico at the Mexican border. This rides the Great Divide mountain bike route, one of the Adventure Cycling Association routes. And we follow that every year. We track the racers on trackleaders.com. So you can go there and follow the blue dots during the race and see how the racers are doing. And when the racers call in, they don't all call in, but some of them like to call in and check in and let us know how they're doing. We play their calls on mtbcast.com. Then in the evenings, depending on how many we have, we try to true them all up and give you some commentary and let you know what's going on, what we see out there, report on some of the things that you talk about on bikepacking.net and Facebook and places like that about the race. Each year we cover this race. We offer the toll-free number for the racers, 888-866-4491. They can use that to call in. They don't have to pay any toll charges if they happen to be using a payphone. Yes, there are still payphones out there. This is the West, and there's a lot of opportunities for them to use phones if they don't have signal. So we try to encourage them to call. They can call, of course, from their cell phone. There is an app available, MTB Cast app. You can look for it on Android and on the iPhone store. So racers, you can do that. There's a call button there that you can press that will call MTB Cast for you to leave your updates. And of course, U.S. fans and family and friends can use the app to get the calls as I post them. I post them throughout the day. And then, as I say, I true them up at night in a podcast. The calls during the day don't go out to the main podcast feed on iTunes or on the website. They go to a special call-in feed that you can find on mtbcast.com or get on the app. I also post the calls to Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me at mtbcast, and you can get those calls that way as well. So lots of opportunities for following the racers, and I hope you avail yourself of all of them as they make their way 2,700 miles along the Great Divide mountain bike route. Each year, I try to give an opportunity for some of the racers who are riding for charities to get the charity out there. If you go to mtbcast.com on the main sticky post, you'll find some of the racers' names and who they're riding for. I urge you to go out there and find a charity that speaks to you and donate on behalf of these racers. I'm sure they would very much appreciate that. We also try to interview a few of them to give them an opportunity to plug their charity as well. And that's really the purpose of the show today. As we look ahead, we'll do a pre-race show probably tomorrow evening to go over some last-minute things about the race. But today, I wanted to give you an opportunity to hear our interview with Marty Johnson. Marty is riding for Living Water International, and he sat down with us and talked to us a little bit about his preparation and what he's been doing to prepare for the race and what his strategy is for sleep and that type of thing, and to talk about Living Water International. We are here with Marty Johnson. Marty, of course, is no stranger to MTB Cast, as we've seen his name and heard his calls before, and he is returning to the Tour Divide this year, and we want to welcome you and thank you for being with us, Marty.
Glad to be here tonight, Joe.
First of all, you know, what everybody wants to know anytime somebody's on the show is, what are you riding? Rigid, full suspension. Can you tell us a little bit about your rig?
Sure. I've got a 2016 Salsa Cutthroat that, of course, this is the first year that bike has been out, but it's a 2.9er. It's Salsa's dedicated bike packing bike, drop bar, 2.9er. It's got 2.2-inch tires, rigid front fork, and it's the complete bike. I don't think I've changed anything on it. A little bit of the gearing I've changed, but pretty much it's just stock, the Rival 1 model.
Okay, and you've spent a good bit of time on the bike. I mean, what are your impressions of the bike? Obviously, you've chose it to do the race, and you're happy with it, but how does it compare to some of the other bikes that you've been doing some of these events with?
Well, you know, last year I did the Divide, and I had the Salsa Fargo Tie, and when on that bike, I thought, you know, this is And Austell, that bike will be here longer than I am. That titanium bike, it's an awesome bike. And I thought, you know, there'll never be a better bike. And then actually I saw the prototype or Jay Peterberry was on this bike last year in Banff. And I was at the Grand Depart. I kind of looked over there and it's like, you know, what's Jay riding? And it's like, that's got to be a new bike. And then of course, I guess they introduced it right then. But I thought, you know, there'll never be a better bike than the Fargo Tide. But after doing some research and the way that they can mold carbon fiber in the manufacturing process, it's very compliant with the stays. And of course, being from Kansas, and of course we think this is the gravel central of the country right here in Kansas with the Flint Hills and all. But you know, I've ridden it on the Land Run 100, which is down in Stillwater, Oklahoma, and ridden it quite a bit in the Flint Hills, and it's a very comfortable bike, a little more compliant than the Fargo. It's a lighter bike, and of course the wood chipper bars I really like. But no, it's a great bike, and look forward to getting on it. And got Dirty Kansas this week, and then head out to Banff. Looking forward to seeing how it performs there.
So you're going to use the Dirty Kansas as sort of a break-in for yourself or a warm-up?
Yeah, and actually I need to correct that. I'm not riding you that Dirty Kansas. I'm doing the Dirty Kansas, the half pint, the 100. The Dirty Kansas is 200 miles, and I've done it, but just flying out Tuesday is just so short of a period of time. And I guess I don't say I'm not worried about not being recovered, because on the divide, after you start riding, you're not recovered at all if you're riding 100 miles a day. So, I don't want to be wore out going into the divide, but the Dirty Kansas will be kind of a warm up for the tour divide.
So you're settled in with your rig. Tell us a little bit about what your strategy is going to be with sleeping and food and water. I mean, of course, you've been out there before, but are you changing anything going back?
You know, I'm not changing a lot on my setup, but I am doing some things on my sleeping. And last year, before I went on the divide, a friend of mine that does a lot of adventure type, more backpacking, I visited with him. I said, you know, do I take a bivy sack or a tent? And his advice was take a tent. He said, you know, if it's rainy, you're going to want some place to go. And everybody has to make these decisions on their own. I took a bivy sack last year, and it works fine. You know, the bivy sacks are fast. You can get into those things, but the condensation is tough on those things, and it's just, you know, you're kind of, everything gets damp, and on the divide your gear is laying out next to you, and a lot of times you've got heavy dew, and it just stuff just gets wet. So this year I am I'm taking a one person Big Agnes Fly Creek one person tent, and it'll be a bit of a weight penalty, but not a whole lot. It's, I think, under 2 pounds, right at 2 pounds.
Very light tent, but, absolutely.
Yeah, but, and, you know, so I think it'll cost me a little bit of time, but, again, like my friend says, you know, if it rains, you want some place to go. I think, you know, once it's set up, my gear will stay a little bit drier, so I'm changing that. I've got a inflatable a pad that I've kind of gone back and forth. Now, some people don't take a pad, and but I'm going to take it. I think recovery time you do have is important in sleeping. So I think I'll take the pad. Got a Western Mountaineering Caribou sleeping bag, which was 35 degree bag, which was plenty warm. There was a couple mornings we had a little bit of frost, but it'll be plenty warm.
Okay.
Yeah, and that makes some sense. As I think it was Eleanor McDonough that I interviewed last year, and actually spent a little bit of time riding to Banff from Calgary from the airport with her, and I think she took a tent. And her thing was it kind of gives you an abode. You know what I mean? It kind of gives you a home each night, and you know, depending on how your sleep is, you know, speaking for myself, you know, sometimes that's a little bit important just to have that sense of. And of course, over the course of a race this long, having that sense of this is kind of my home away from home, and giving you that opportunity to kind of de-stress and maybe sleep better. So I don't think it's a bad strategy per se.
No, I don't think so. And kind of what, you know, you spend a lot of time on the bike and you so many things go through your mind. And you know, one thing that everything, the preparation for this ride and I think maybe everything in life too, everything there's a cost and benefit. Yeah. And on Dubai, it's a cost on weight, space, and time. And your benefit is, you know, whatever you gain from that. And the thing about, yeah, that tent's going to cost me a little bit of space and weight and a little bit of time to set it up. But I think the benefit that I get from that is going to be great. Like I say, it's going to be, I never thought about that. It's going to be kind of a home away from home. But I think that's a good analogy.
Well, and you know, like Matthew always says, you know, you don't want to sleep more than 4 hours when you're contending for things like the record. And I'm sure that's true. But even at that, you want the best 4 hours you can get.
Yeah. Well, just to make it clear, Joe, I'm not going for the record.
Even those that are contending for the record, you know, they say, well, I'm only going to do 4 hours of sleep. I would still think you'd be one. You know, they're going to shoot for the best 4 hours they can, and if yours is going to be six, you know, you're going to want the best you can. I guess that's my point.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was saying, but, you know, on last year, I got kind of thinking about, you know, I get 6 or 7 hours of sleep a night, you know, about like I do here, but, you know, and I didn't like riding at night, and my goal last year was about 100 miles a day, and And by the time you got someplace, you were able to bed down, mm-hmm. you know, before not too late and sleep until it starts getting light, which, you know, days are long then. But, yeah, you get really pretty good sleep on the route.
Right. Now, do you think that will change? I don't recall what your strategy was in the desert. Do you think you might flip that when you get down to the desert where it's hotter? Will you be... Maybe I will ride a little bit more at night, or will anything, I guess, in the way that you ride the different, the varying terrain, will any of that change this year? Is there something like that you learned last year? You know, when I ride this section, I'm going to do it differently, or I'm going to ride later in the day or something like that?
You know, are you talking about like in the Gila or up in Wyoming? And so last year, I slept outside of Atlantic City and made that, we had breakfast there and made that push to Wamsutter. So that was, what, I think 100 miles. So mm-hmm. Got there at about 10 o'clock at night, stayed in a motel there, and then went to Brush Mountain Lodge. So I really didn't sleep out in the desert. I guess between Boulder and Atlantic City, I did, and that was a great night. It was that route between there. It was rolling hills. It was flat. It was smooth. And we rode pretty late that night. I think that will be maybe some strategy is, again, I don't like riding at night if the road conditions are bad. But if it's in New Mexico, after Cuba, I rode till about 2:30 that night, and it was paved there, but it was a beautiful evening. Thunderstorms had kind of gone through, and it was just one of those nights where the sunset's just so pretty. And I call those 3 miles because, you know, I say it was paved and you could just ride and I think I'll try to take advantage of some of those situations where I can a little more this year than last year.
Yeah. Well, as I said, you've gone through there before, so you kind of know, I guess, where those areas are that you can kind of take advantage of like that.
Yeah, and you know where some of those convenience stores are. And and last year, I spent 13 nights in the motel and 14 nights on the road last year. And more of those nights up north, maybe there's more opportunities. Plus, there's more maybe grizzly activity up there, but I never had any problems with those. But maybe, I guess this year, I'm going to try to spend more nights on the road instead of maybe getting to a town at 7, 8 o'clock, maybe continue on another couple hours. And, you know, over the period of 2 or 3 weeks, it'll maybe save me a couple days.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the hotels, you know, it's very enticing, but it's also, you know, fraught with sucking a lot of time off of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you're writing for a cause this year, and that cause is the Living Water International. What can you tell us about the cause, and how did you choose this charity?
Well, I'll start how I first found out about it. My daughter and her son, or and her husband, for their parents for Christmas about 3 years ago, decided their church in St. Louis supported the Living Water International as a missions project, and my granddaughters in their Sunday school classes, they were raising money, and so for Christmas they gave the parents a gift card or card to a donation in our behalf, and you can go online and you could put in the number and you can find a project around the world, and you can select one of those projects, and those funds will go towards that project. And it's like, you know, I really appreciated that, because most of us of Americans don't need more stuff. And it was, I guess that's how I first found out about it. And so the first year I picked the country, and then the next 2 years, I got the gift card again for Christmas, and I gave it to friends of mine that have young children. It's like, you know, it doesn't matter to me where it goes, but, you know, you take this car, sit down with your kids, and find a place where these funds can go. So hopefully they'll, you know, these young grade school children will realize that people around the world are not as fortunate as us in the United States, where we can go to the sink, turn on the water, and it's clean, it's healthy, and have water there. So did that the last 2 years. And then last year, you mentioned riding through the desert. You know, on the divide, people say you need to pack your fears. And one of the fears or concerns I had was running out of food and water. And so I always made sure I had water. So I, you know, riding through Wyoming, it's like, you know, it'd be so great to do a cause or figure out if this ride could have been raising money for Living Water International. And so that's what I chose. You know, this year, when I decided to do it again, it's like, yeah, I'm gonna ride and try to raise some money. And my goal is to raise $5,000, and I think I'm about a third of the way there right now. But I visited with the folks in Texas, and they said that the wells run from about $5,000 to $15,000 or $20,000, depending on which country they're in. But so I thought, well, the goal is $5,000, and if we raise that, we'll drill a well someplace. So that's kind of the short of it. And I say we're about a third of the way there, and you know, it's a mission. And you know, one thing I like about it is they go, and you know, and when you go to try to teach somebody something, whatever it is, whatever message you're taking to them, you're not going to get very far if they're hungry and thirsty. So I think meeting these basic needs that we take for granted, I think, is very important. And then they also, you know, they give, I don't know if it's classes or what, but they, once they drill that well, they're helping these people with hygiene and clean living, and even beyond that, entrepreneurship and enriching those people's lives, hopefully by just the simple thing as water. And last year they drilled, I think about 1,200 wells, and over the past 25 years, they've drilled almost 17,000 wells.
That's awesome.
Yeah, many of them in Africa, a few of them in Mexico, a few of them in Peru and India, but most of them in Africa.
Like you say, riding this race and having to go through some of the areas that you do and having the fear of going through long stretches without water, I mean, that kind of drives home the importance of water for those who are racers. So, you can imagine what these people, you know, they're not just thinking about, okay, in the next 12 hours on the bike, I got to find, you know, I'm hoping there's going to be water at these points. They got to think about, will there be water there tomorrow? Will there be water there next week?
Yeah, for my mom, for my dad, for my small son and daughter. Yeah. So it's, it really hit home. And like I say, going through some of those dry areas, it really hit home and it made an impact on me. It's like, you know, I need to do something for some other people.
I kind of have a saying when I think whether or not I should give to something or not, it's that giving is for the giver, you know, that whatever happens, like you were talking about with the gift card, whatever happens to that money after the fact, yes, it's important, but what it does for me is, you know, is a huge part of why I give to any particular cause, because first it has to speak to you, of course, and this one surely does, but also just the, you know, like you say, we've got plenty of things. We're very blessed in this country, and something that seems insignificant to us can be very significant when not only as a gift, but when combined with, you know, with other gifts. You know, this $5,000 is going to mean a well, when that well's going to mean, you know, life and health for possibly an entire village. So,
and you know, it's going to, that this $5,000 that drills this well is going to make, I believe, lifelong, going to benefit people their whole life, and
yeah.
Who knows what the good things that will come out of, you know, I think lives will be saved, and you know, you can say, well, who, you know, the person that hopefully their life is saved, what are they going to end up being, you know? So I think it'll go well beyond on just this one well.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Marty, good luck on raising that money. If anyone listening is interested in this cause, and we have several posted on MTBcast, and one or more of these may speak to you, we'd certainly invite anyone to donate to the cause. I think those of us who do adventures and, you know, be it bike packing or backpacking or whatever, know the importance of water. So this is definitely one that speaks to just about everyone. So we wish you luck in meeting that goal.
Okay, they can go to MTBcast. I saw you have a link up for donating to this cause and the other causes as well. And then, or they can go to my blog, which is www.bucketsride.bike, and there's a link there where they can go to the donation page.
Okay, great. Well, be safe out there, Marty, and we'll be following you on the blue dots and. Hope to hear from you along the way as well.
Roger, I'll be calling in.
Great. Take care, and thanks for being with us.
All right, thank you, Joe.
We want to thank Marty for being with us and urge you to go out to mtbcast.com, follow the link to his CrowdRise donation page where you can donate to this cause if you're so interested. And we want to wish him a safe ride as he makes his way down to Antelope Wells. That's it for this show. We just want to get you a little bit of information on some of these charities and some hear from some of these riders and kind of wet your whistle a little bit. Tomorrow evening will be the big pre-race show. We'll talk a little bit about what's going on with the race. Stickers have been sent, so if you're a racer, there will be stickers available with the MTBcast number. That number is 888-866-4491. If you want to put it in your cell phone now, please do. We look forward to hearing from you and letting us know how your race is going throughout the race. Please call in, and we'll play them back, and your family and friends can get those calls at mtbcast.com. Hope you're having a great Wednesday. Maybe you can sneak out at lunch and get those tires dirty. That's a wrap.
This, like all MTBcast audio, is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 license.